sabrosura, papi, que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, the Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make the world a better place. Welcome to episode 353 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Mayra Alejandra Garcia. Mayra is a financial literacy education and coach on a mission to empower and motivate families to live a debt-free lifestyle. After spending years in debt, she started her debt-free journey in 2010 and was able to pay off her debt in 17 months. Mayra is a wife and a mother of two and is passionate about teaching financial literacy. She's also the host of the Debt-Free Latina podcast. Listeners, as you may potentially gather, I don't know, Mayra is a friend of mine, so we are fellow podcasters. We connected through the podcasting world, and she is awesome. It's kind of funny because I always want my friends to be on the podcast, but oftentimes I forget. And at the same time, one of the things that I told Mayra is I have the list of people that I love and care about ready. So when the time comes, of course, I want everyone to be on Café con Pam. And so this conversation with Mayra was awesome. I think, frankly, it was short. Not like we still went the full hour, but I think we have a lot more to talk about. And so I'm curious because the conversation around money has one that's come up a lot. And I recently was on Jen Hemphill, who is another podcaster who also talks about money. And we talked about the various aspects around money. So I've been hearing the money thing a lot. And if you don't know, I have the 38 Tapping Challenge, which explores our relationship with our own self-worth first and foremost. And we use the tool, we use tapping to explore it. And so I'm curious, after you listen to this conversation, to see if you are interested in tuning into more of these conversations, because it's something that I often talk about inside with clients. I'm curious to know if this is something that you want to hear more about. Sin más ya, I know I talked too much already. Here's my conversation with Mayra Alejandra Garcia. Mayra, welcome to Café con Pam.
Thank you so much for having me, Pam.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited. It's kind of like a long, long time in the making.
Yes.
So the first question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
I am Mexican-American.
And where are you tuning in from today?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Have you always lived in Phoenix?
No. I'm originally from East LA.
Mm-hmm. How did you land in Phoenix?
I came 18 years ago. To Phoenix.
You're Phoenician now. Is that what you call
people from Phoenix? I am, I guess. Yeah. I've been here a while. My kids were super tiny, so they're more Phoenicians than me, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of living was a lot cheaper here. It's now about the same as LA. So we came at a good time because we were able to buy a house here versus it was almost impossible
at
in
a
LA.
Fraction,
yes.
Probably.
Oh, for sure.
Oof. So let's go back into your story. So were you born and raised in East LA, in LA?
Yes. I was born and raised in East LA, Boyle Heights, to be exact.
Wow.
Yes.
And so, and I say, wow, because that's like where everyone talks about, you know, like it's the brown people place.
Mm-hmm.
And how was it for you? Are you first gen?
I am.
And your parents, did they do like, ¿cómo se dice? Were they like hand labor?
Yeah, my mom was a nanny for rich families, like producers in Hollywood. And like, she got to meet really famous people. It's actually really funny stories. But my dad was a taxi driver.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And how was it for you to grow up in a place where it's predominantly black and brown people? Brown people, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it was, there was nothing but people that looked like me all my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I never felt like there's a piece of me that when Latinas say like, I never saw this or I never saw that. I didn't experience a lot of that because my teachers were Mexican American. My teachers were, like looked like me and inspired me. And yeah, I had a few white teachers here and there, but and even black, but it was very far, like it was very rare.
When was it that you, or have you felt at a moment with like not like you belonged? Because I feel like in Boyle Heights, like ever, like
I think it was not until I moved to Phoenix.
I was gonna say.
I felt the racism here. I felt the change in just how Mexican Americans here in Phoenix, I felt at the time when I moved here, were not proud of who they were, or maybe even hid their like heritage, where I came from East LA, like I'm proud to be Mexican. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we speak Spanish. Like,
Soy
and
tiempo.
so it was a culture shock a little bit when I moved here, but I was like, okay, I understand the history now and why people feel that way, or why first gen and second gen here in Phoenix, a lot of them don't speak the language. They don't speak Spanish. And so I understood once I learned it. My sister's an educator. So I literally went to her and I was like, ¿Por qué la gente no tiene like orgullo de ser como son? And she was like, let me give you a history lesson.
Sit down. Let's talk about it. It's fascinating because so David used to live in Phoenix, and coming from, I'm in San Diego, and so coming from a very blue state, going into, I think Arizona's blue now. I think it flipped for a second. It's blue now. It was very red for a long time. To me, the biggest shock, I 100% resonate with what you're saying, because I would go to Phoenix all the time. Like literally once a month. And it wasn't, and this is, we're talking, you've been there longer than I have. I mean, then when I started going, like 2016 to like 2020-ish, I think. And I could notice those things. And what shocked me the most that I wasn't used to at all was the open carry.
Oh, it's everywhere. I mean, it's literally everybody open carries. This is the Wild Wild West over here.
It's fascinating. The first time I remember we were at a restaurant and we're walking in, and this guy is literally sitting down, loaded up, like on his belt. And my body went into
Hence.
like super fight or flight. And I like grabbed David and I was like, oh my gosh, he has a gun. And he was like, it's fine. He was like, this is what happens here. Like that doesn't mean that he's going to do anything with it. And which I, and tell me if your perspective has shifted a little bit living in a state that's open carry. Because when David and I talked about it, he's like, I would rather ha see someone who's open carrying and know that they're caring than someone literally pull something out of nowhere without like being aware of it. And it made me think a lot about that.
It was something that definitely shifted my perspective because when I did move here 18 years ago, I was fearful of guns and I was raised in California. We don't have those things. And it was a little scary, but I also had my sister who had been living here a little bit and explained a little more of that. So, I vividly remember this one situation that happened in the Arrowhead area at the mall. And that was the day, even though I had been here years, I was still against it. I was still like, nope, like nobody needs to be carrying a gun. Like it's not necessary. But there was a situation where somebody walked into the Arrowhead Mall with a gun and started shooting at people. But because somebody was open carry and had a concealed as well, like there he was open carry, but he also had a concealed weapon like license or whatever, and he shot the shooter like pretty quickly and early on. So like it could have been a huge like what do you call them,
Tragedy.
yes, like it could have been a lot of
Or like
casualties,
an instant,
yeah, but it was handled very quickly by somebody just shopping. So
totally.
That's what I was like, oh, maybe that's not such a bad idea. And so now I am grateful, like when I see it and I'm like, okay, I feel safe here. Like if somebody gets crazy.
There's somebody else. I know. It's like, and you know, this doesn't have to turn into a like a conversation about guns, but having lived in places in various, like I also, my sister lives in Kansas City, so I go there all the time. They recently had the shooting. And so it's a different reality that you experience. And a conversation that I've had with my partner, with David, because he's also lived in the Midwest for a long time, is that I don't know if it's possible to get to a place where gun control is going to be possible, because we're so far into the fact that people have so many, like it's been so open for so long that it would just create a like revolution, a civil right, like a whole thing.
I think so too.
And so I think this is like,
it's one of those things where it's like every topic that is controversial.
Yeah.
Unless you can closely relate to the topic and you have a personal experience or somebody very, very close to you that you love has been personally affected by it, it may change your mind. And I've had a lot of those moments throughout my life where I'm like, no, es que esto. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be a little open-minded and not be so, because I haven't had that experience myself. Totally. And so, I think the most important thing is to understand, even if somebody is on the opposite side of what your viewpoint is, to understand the why they feel that way and what has their life experience showed them that they're so stuck on the opposite viewpoint, right? And I think that's, for me, the most important. At least we can agree to disagree, but I understand why.
Totally. We can have a conversation around it and hear, to your point, the various types of opinions and views and perspectives, because I think many times being super radical prevents people from listening. 100%.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree.
Oof. Bueno, back to your story. That was like a super intense hit stop. So you grew up in Boyle Heights, and what happens when you're 16 years old?
Ooh, I got pregnant and had a baby.
Unplanned?
Yes.
How was it with your family?
Oh, we're gonna go there. Okay. My mother immediately told me that I had options.
Wow.
I was very torn because I went 2 years to a Catholic school. So I just remember thinking like, what are you saying? Like, that is totally against what you instilled in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a choice to make. It was very difficult. I, at the time, was very, you know, I felt a really good connection with my husband, who is my husband now. He was my boyfriend at the time. And I thought, like, I just need help. Like, I just need to get through high school. Like, I know I can do this. I just need help.
Mm.
And my mother-in-law was one of the people that's like, pues, you know, she was very Catholic. And she's like, pues eso no se hace. And we have your back. And I just remember for the first time, like, that being like, okay, I have her support. If I could just get my mom to support me, I'm going to have this baby. And she came around. It didn't take very long. It may be a day. And she was like, and I said, I'm going to keep the baby. I'm going to go live with my boyfriend and his family, because that's where I felt more of the support at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left. I moved high schools because I didn't want anybody knowing at Roosevelt High School that I was pregnant. And yeah, I went to Huntington Park High School and finished my junior year there.
And how was it for a 16-year-old to
It was really hard because at first, like, nobody knew I was pregnant. And then when I started showing, I kind of had to tell everybody, but nobody really knew me from like my childhood. So I was like, whatever. And then, yeah, I had him my first semester of my senior year. So I had him in September. I had just started the school year. And then I was put in home studies to finish my senior year. So I still went to prom with Roosevelt because I had friends over there and they got me tickets to the prom. So I still got to go to the prom with my friends from childhood.
Nice.
I moved out of my in-laws like a few months after I moved in with them. So like maybe 2 months, they got us an apartment, they furnished it for us. I had a lot of support. Like I have no complaints. So my in-laws have been, I mean, to this day, they're super supportive and always helping us out.
That's awesome. How was the conversation with him, with your husband?
Of course, he was shocked, but at the same time, he was like,
You were both
we'll
16?
do. No, he was 21. So my mom was threatening to put him in jail.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was another thing. And I was like, Mom, please don't. Like, please don't. I'll figure this out.
¿Qué fue más difícil? ¿Convencerla de eso o the pre keep the pregnancy?
It took a while to convince her not to press charges, but at the same time, I was like, Mom, I'm not dumb. Like, I know I'm a straight A student. I was college bound. Like, I'm gonna figure this out.
And she did.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a
So,
wild story. I don't think I've ever shared that. I'm like sweating, girl.
it's part of your story. And I think there's many stories like that. And so for me, my best friend in high school, when she was 15, she got pregnant. And so because she was pregnant, my mom was like, "You're not gonna be next." And she sent me to Mexico City. And so I share
I
this.
have heard this story.
And so I'm familiar with the realities of teen pregnancies, not from a first-hand experience, but from like an immediate like friends. And I do one of the things that I think they're super interesting, and I need to stop saying interesting so much, but is how the moms of the girl, of the woman, abortion doesn't come into the conversation until it's their daughter. That's what I have seen it many times when it's like, no, eso no se hace, you know? But then it's your daughter, then, oh, we consider it, which I'm like, oh, this is so fascinating, you know? Like, because I wonder, and we don't have to go there, but it's just something that I've thought about. Like, I wonder if it's because el que dirán.
I think maybe a very small portion. My mom was very radical and like le valía madre. So like I mean that was she was more concerned about my future and making sure I didn't mess up what I had going for me. And I think that was her motive more than anything else.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. So for Maida, 16 years old, knowing that you had a trajectory, kind of like you liked school, you had this path, and then there's this kind of like, oh, this could be a little bump in the road, pun intended. And so how do you make sure that the plan does still plans?
I actually was able to move really quickly. And I was like, okay, I'm a problem solver by nature. So, like, I went into problem solving mode. I'm going to move high school so that I don't deal with, like,
Backlash.
just the shame, right? The shame that being around my friends from childhood. I'm gonna try to find a solution once the baby's born to continue going to high school. I promised my mom that I would graduate on time, and I did.
Nice.
I did sign up to the community college, but that's when things got really hard because I needed to work.
Right.
And so going part-time and not going full-time was something that bothered her, but she was like, pues tú sigue, you know, like it's not a big deal. Yeah, like I just went into the workforce really young and have been ever since.
How did you manage with your husband? When did you get married?
I got married in 2006, so after I had two kids with him.
Oh,
Yeah, I did things backwards, girl. Everything backwards.
But hey, you made it work.
Hey.
And why did you decide to get married? I mean, you had been together, you had kids, you know, like all the things.
Yeah. So when we moved to Phoenix in 2006, we moved in September of 2006. And we moved into my sister's house temporarily for like a month or two.
As brown people do.
We had a conversation with her and her husband. And that's when it just kind of was like, when are you guys getting married? And that kind of sparked everything. So we were married 2 months later in November. It was quick. It was a...
I see.
Yeah, I think we planned it in 3 weeks.
¿Pero tú querías una boda o fue más así como que pues ya estamos aquí?
I did want a wedding and I really didn't care that it was small because it was. I think for me, I did want to like get married.
And your kids were there?
Yeah.
How fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Being that you were a young mom that you had to start working, how did debt happen?
Oh,
was it
gosh.
because of that?
Well, when I got with my husband back when I was 16, he already had credit card debt. So I went into this like, okay, he has student loans, he has credit card debt, and I just inherited this moving in with him, right? So I wasn't working at the time, I was still in high school.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm going to help this guy get organized, but I didn't know how. I didn't have the tools yet.
Right.
I just had enough knowledge to be like, well, we can't live above our means. Like that was like the gist. But he only made like $7 an hour at the time.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, this is 2001.
Wow.
And I was like, pues ni modo, we're going to figure this out. So it took us forever. But then things started happening, right? The baby needed new clothes. The baby needed new stuff. And I needed stuff. And so we started getting different credit cards for different stores and trying to get the discount. And then you get sucked in, just like everybody else. And so, yeah, we needed a car because at the time when I met my husband, he has a 2-seater CRX.
Oh my gosh. Not a family car.
No. So when we had the baby, we were forced to get another car. And the only way we could get another car was going to the dealer because we didn't know better.
Yep.
So there was like little things like that where poquito poquito, it just kind of kept creeping. And then by 2010, my kid is already like 8, 9. I'm in a house I can't afford. I'm already living here in Phoenix in a house that's like 40% of my take home pay. And I have a credit card for every store you can think of.
Oof.
So it just happened gradually.
I mean, that's how, like, it's the monster of debt that just starts eating you.
For sure.
Like, a little bit. And it's like, it's como, like, a nag, you know? Like,
yeah.
Poquito, poquito. Were you always into, like, how do we organize money type thing? Or was it because you found yourself in this place?
No, I always was the one that would handle everything and pay everything. And, you know, our check would go into the same account all the time. I think it was, I came across this, you know, class at our church. And that's when I was like, maybe we should go. Pero hubieras visto the fight. I almost like literally like left my husband at the time because he didn't want to go. And I was like, I think we need to go. And he's like, no, para qué? Estamos bien. Like, it's fine. And I'm just like, no, we really need to go. So it took a long time to convince him. I think it was literally the day of the class because they had announced it for weeks was when he finally decided, like, fine, I'll go to one of them. And then he was hooked. He was like, okay, this makes sense. Let's see if we can learn these skills. So I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Were you already in conversation of like, how are we going to pay this off? Or was it like, because I feel like a lot of people just live in debt if it's like one more bill to pay. It's like, oh, it's the credit card bill. It's like the light bill. It's just one more bill to pay. And it's not like, let's get out of it.
Yeah. I think for me, we were trying to get out of it, but there was always something happening, something that would arise that would derail us. And now looking back, I see that there was no official budget. I was just making a list of all the payments I had. And then I would, with the money that was left over, I was able to do whatever I wanted with it instead of designating that extra money to something useful or wise, right?
Okay, this is a great time to take a coffee break.
Bueno.
Mayra, do you drink coffee?
I do, nomás que ya me lo acabé.
Ya, es que ya, yeah. tú estás una hora más después que yo.
No, it's the same time right now.
Es que Arizona is weird because you don't
I'm Pacific right now.
You're Pacific now, okay. So it's 8, okay, thank you for waking up early for me.
Of course.
How do you drink her coffee?
With creamer and a little bit of milk. I can't have it just with creamer.
Oh, interesting.
I need to have a little bit of milk.
Huh.
Yeah.
And you brew it at home?
I do. I have a regular brewed, like regular coffee maker, just normal.
Like a drip?
And then I have a drip. And then I have my espresso machine, which I use occasionally. I try not to use it every day, but only if I need I need to wake up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How fun. And so are you the only one that drinks coffee or your husband does too? Do your kids drink coffee now?
All four of us do. Mm-hmm.
All four of you?
Yeah. So my son actually worked for Dutch Bros.
Oh, wow.
So he was a barista. Yeah.
So he probably makes like great things for you.
He does. No, he does. He definitely makes us different coffees.
How fun.
Yeah.
So creamer and milk, huh?
Yes, a little bit of milk and then a tiny bit of creamer. I actually measure it. It's 1 tablespoon of creamer.
Mírala. You're very practical. That's what I love about you, that you're like so practical about things. So on my end, I'm drinking 4-Sigmatic. My usual think 4-Sigmatic, which is mushroom coffee. Pero esta vez me mandaron, I'm trying the coconut creamer.
Ooh.
Pero la neta, I'm always, I always do genuine reviews. One, I have an intolerance to coconut. I'm not allergic to coconut. I'm just intolerant to it. And so I was like, pero voy a probar la creamer, just to see. Like, I'm not necessarily going to get sick, but my tummy might just be like, what did you do to me today? So it's vanilla coconut. The flavor of the creamer is okay. I did the recommended, which was 1 teaspoon and 1 cup of coffee. Uno no se disolvió bien, which I'm like, maybe I needed to froth it a little bit more. So maybe that's a user error. I don't know. Y dos, la verdad, no me gustó el sabor. I'm not a sweet type of person, so I don't add sugar to my coffee. And because this is vanilla, it has this hint of like, it has this aftertaste that I'm not about. However, if you like coconut, it's very coconut. It's overwhelmingly coconutty, but it is coconutty. And you can try it out. It does include, the creamer also has nootropics or adaptogens, and it also helps with the thinking. Pero in my humble opinion, I would give it a 6 out of 10 to the creamer. The coffee is 10 out of 10, but the creamer is like a 6.5 maybe out of 10. But still use my code Stay Shining. If you want to try it out.
I have to try it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad. Okay. Let's go back to the show. Bueno, Mayra. Entonces, you found yourself in this class, this budgeting class, and you were like, you know what? This actually makes sense. Did it make sense because you had never had a conversation about money before?
Yes, 100%.
Afterwards, like, did you ever explore like that conversation with your parents? Like, what happened that we never talked about budgeting or like creating a spending plan? Yeah.
Yeah. I actually learned a lot about what happened in my family right before I was born.
When you had that conversation?
So I didn't know about a lot of history in my own family. My dad is bipolar and he had a manic episode. And my parents at the time were managers of an apartment complex in LA. And during one of his manic episodes, he went to the bank and took out about 30 to 40,000. I don't know exact amount, but right around there, because they weren't paying rent, so they were just banking all their money.
Nice.
When my dad went manic and withdrew all the money, he went to Chicago to visit family. He disappeared for like over a month, is what my mom told me.
No.
Yeah, because he was manic. He wasn't realizing what he was doing. So that from that point forward, my mom
How old were
gave
you?
up. I wasn't born yet. It was right
Oh
before I was
my
born.
gosh.
Yeah, it was right before. So then he came back
Y se
wanting
acabó el
to
dinero.
just se acabó todo el dinero.
Oh.
Y mi mamá de ese punto le valió gorro.
Sí, claro.
And she was like, forget it. I'm just gonna live my life and I'm gonna enjoy it.
Not worry about savings or the future or.
No, she was done.
I love that you share this because I think this is an invitation for everyone to have this conversation with with their family and their parents because you do learn a lot. And it also shows us how looking at it from a trauma perspective, it also shows us how we utilize historical data to make decisions moving forward. And so in your case, your mom was like, look, el dinero se acaba because whatever reason, in that case, it was your dad. And so maybe the story that she created at that moment was like, no tiene caso because at some point it could just go away. Wow. ¿Y luego qué pasó?
My mom was always living paycheck to paycheck her whole life after that. Like, it was not something we would talk about. We would go wild at tax season and buy all the clothes for the year and the shoes and everything. And I mean, ahorita en ese tiempo, she would like, oh my gosh, there's thousands of dollars. Let's go shopping. And my mom lived at the mall. My mom would take us to the mall all the time.
Wow. And that makes me think of like right now, you know, I'm moving and I'm noticing with my own mom the apprehension of getting rid of things. Because when also looking at it from historical data, when your things have been taken away and then you finally get something, it's really hard to let go of it. And so one thing that I've been having a lot of conversations of like, you know, like you saw my post of like, it's really easy for me to get rid of everything but my journals, you know, like, but for some people, I worked with a client who was moving, and for her, it was really hard to get rid of clothes because in her case, when she was young, she didn't have a lot of them. And so finally, when she did, it was this like, that's the only thing I have.
Yeah, I have a very similar, like, there's a similar story with my mother-in-law. In Mexico, no tenían mucho, and now her closet is like bursting at the seams.
Claro. And probably some things still with the tag and
Oh, 100%.
eek. Bueno, entonces you have this conversation, you start working on your own debt. It takes you 17 months. What did you do different?
Actually, my husband got a second job, like right away. That was one way that we were able to
So you
increase our
made more
income.
money.
Yes. So we increased our income and we knew it was going to be temporary because we couldn't keep his second job forever. And so once we did that, we also had a huge hailstorm in Phoenix that hit the city. And my husband, so this is 2010. So it was like in the fall, September-ish, this hailstorm hit and destroyed his 2009 car. So his car was fairly new. Like it had like so many dents. It was incredible, like hundreds of dents. And so the insurance company gave us a really hefty check.
Nice.
And my father-in-law is carrocero. So he's like, I'll fix it for you. Just give me the material money.
Nice.
And so we were able to bank a significant amount. Like at the time, I think it was like $4,000 to $5,000. And
Nice.
so we threw it at our debt. We didn't spend it. We just got rid of it. And then that kind of helped us. I think like 2 months after that was when we were completely done.
That's awesome. And so I want to come back a little bit when you said, because I feel like I hear this a lot, where people say, I'm really trying, but then something happens. Like the refrigerator stuff was working. And so I'm like trying to pay it off, but then like something happens. And so when you're like, when you finally decided, we're going to do this, he gets a second job, you get the money for the car. Did things still happen?
Yes.
Because things will always happen.
Yes.
And so what was the decision? How did you make sure that you stayed on track while things were still happening?
What's interesting is that I never grew up going to a secondhand store.
Mm.
My husband didn't either. And it was one of the taboo topics even in his home growing up. So when I considered like, well, I need this, I need that, let's go to Goodwill or let's go to Salvation Army or let's go. It was like, sí, pero no le vas a decir a mi mamá. So when we started looking at other choices, other decisions, secondhand this or secondhand that, there was a lot of, we had to unlearn from our childhood, like that it's okay because it's only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's okay because we don't plan to do this forever, but this is just while we get out of this. And what's funny is that we never really stopped going to Goodwill. We just like going and browsing.
It's a great place.
It is.
You find like and super awesome finds.
I mean, a veces, you know, I can walk out with nothing. I just love going to browse. A ver qué tienen, you know,
right.
Things change all the time.
I know.
And so, yeah, it's just one of those things. We still have never told my mother-in-law that we go to Goodwill occasionally. And it's just one of those things where it's like, she don't need to know.
She don't need to know. I think one thing that I find fascinating with this is, you know, white people be like restoring shit and like, let me DIY like this old table that I found in the alleyway. And it's like, they're so proud and it's like this trendy thing. And for us, it's like, I remember when you say that your mom used to babysit rich kids, my mom used to go to like Pacific Palisades and I don't remember. What is the other one? Huntington? I don't know. Like the big, big, big houses. And many times she would come home from like, you know, this wasn't the curb and it was like a brand new something. And it was literally just sitting on the curb. And so I laugh when I see this, like, oh, I found this thing on the, and I'm restoring it. And I'm like, Latinos have been doing this forever. Immigrants have been doing this all the time. And maybe this is why there's a little shame around it.
Yeah, I think also my mother-in-law comes from a very like super, super poor, like had nothing to eat. And so now living in the States, she's like, I don't need to live that life anymore. And
right.
And she's so like, in some ways I'm like, yeah, you don't, like, it's fine. But totally. A lot of it comes from trauma. Like, ya no quiere sufrir, ya no de, like, she doesn't deserve anything secondhand anymore. She deserves like new. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. You can afford it. Go for it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And this is why having conversations and understanding where people come from is really important. Because mm-hmm. many times we could get frustrated, you know, like first, second gens, like you see your immigrant parents, grandparents, and you're like, bored. But then when we give ourselves the space to think back, like, oh, this is why.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I understand.
For sure. And it's not that she's fijada, because she's not.
Right.
It's more of a, if you understood her childhood and how hard it was, you understand that she deserves better now.
And then you would probably be like, yes, you
yes, go
like
for
buy
it.
The brand new thing.
Totally.
Your inner child would love that.
Yes.
Okay. So you get out of the debt. He, I'm hoping, stopped the second job.
Yes.
And then you have this great life. What decision, conversation happened around, we're not going to have any more debt?
It was one of those things where I didn't want to be in that stressful situation anymore. I just had this, you know, him and I both agreed that that was stressful and we don't want to live that life. We didn't get to enjoy a lot of things that we wanted to when we were in our 20s, even in our early 30s, because we were in the middle of raising kids. And like, we never partied, we never went to clubs, we never, like, we didn't know any. So now I feel like that you know, I'm about to be 40. He's in his 40s. He's like, let's go live our life. Let's go travel. Like, we have plans like the whole year to go do something like almost every month. And it's like, the only way to live it up for us right now is to stay out of debt and not pay interest to anyone.
Ooh, and not pay interest to anyone. So for people that might be where you were before you paid it off, mm-hmm. that, I mean, one, when the store tells you, would you like to get 10% off and sign up for this credit card? The answer is always no, people. 10% is not worth it. Because then you're paying the 10% interest, to your point of the interest. So what would you say, like, three things that people could do to start getting themselves, digging themselves out of the hole?
The first thing is that you need to know your numbers. And the only way to really know your numbers is to create a working budget, not a list of all the things you owe. I'm talking about include your life in this budget. And so there's like a list of categories that I like to give, you know, everyone. And I say, like, this is everything you could possibly spend on. If there's a few more, it's going to be literally less than a handful. So go through the things that you tend to spend on and write down first, how much is your payment a month? How often, on what day you give it? And then what is your balance on that account? So then once you have that data, you can create your budget. You can create, like, based on a week, right? Like, I like to do a month's view and then break it down by week. And then you can create your debt snowball from there as well.
So what would you say to the people that get overwhelmed with numbers? So, I mean, myself included, but I do like looking at my money. I've worked a lot through my money story. Because my money story was no me alcanza. Entonces, for me, didn't matter how much money I made. Like, it really didn't. Every time, guess what? No me alcanzaba. Because that was the running program in my head. And so for the people that say they don't like numbers, the other thing, I like to call it a spending plan.
Yeah, that's good.
Because when I say I'm a budget, to me, it's like, ooh, constricting.
Okay, that's fair.
It feels like you're, like, putting me in a box. And so I'm like, you know, I'm going to give myself a spending plan.
I use the word in my, like, copy as a cash flow plan, like, ooh, how cash flows.
Yes, I love that. Like a river. Yeah.
Yes.
Always flowing.
Yep.
So for the people that don't like numbers, what would you say to them?
I would say that's okay and it's valid. That's number one. We all have two areas of our life that we tend to struggle with. And we all have two areas of our life that we are very good at and comes easy to us out of the seven areas of life. If you've never seen that or heard of that, like, just Google Wheel of Life, Zig Ziglar, and that will come up on Google. So you can see the seven areas of life. And when you are struggling with one or two areas of your life, like, for example, if it's in your finances, it's really important that you find a coach in that area of your life that you can learn from to have the skills. And then two, that will help you build the habit. And then three, help you keep you accountable, because that's where the action happens.
Right.
So that's, like, whatever it is, like, for me, it's my fitness. Like, I struggle with my weight. I'm up and down all the time. Like, right now I'm in a good streak, but, like, I know, like, who am I kidding? It's going to get hard. And I need support. I need support. I need somebody that's going to be like, ¿qué está pasando? What are you thinking about? ¿Qué estás comiendo? Why did you get off your, you know, streak? I want people to help me understand where my mindset is. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Same. And I'm super good with the money part, right? I coach people with the money piece all the time. And I know these skills. But it's hard to do it in the area of your life that you're weak in and that you struggle with, and that it's going to be naturally hard. So money, we're either, like, really good with math or really good with reading and writing. And it's like, lo que te toque.
what would you say to the people que les da pena? Because the money is like, oh no, it's like, no voy a poner mis trapitos al sol. Like, that's my thing. And so I feel like a lot of times I've talked to my brother about this because he's super open about like he literally like tells people like, how much money do you make? And he's like, there shouldn't be any shame around that. And so people get very apprehensive, like, that you don't ask that. And he's like, why not? Like, why are you ashamed of it, you know? And so, pero hay mucha pena más in our community because it's so many things. The shame around, I don't know how to do it. I don't know if I'm doing it right. I've never talked about this. It's not something that we talk about in our family. I like so many things. Que dirán, que vas a decir, you're gonna judge me, you know, blah 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 blah. So what would you say to the people that, because I'm 100% with you. I think as a coach, a coach needs a coach for various things. Entonces, and even people that we just need support. So the people que les da pena like to get started, what would you say to that?
I would say dig down into why you feel shame. So, like, for example, it all has to do with, like, if in our household, like in my example, we didn't really talk about money, it was a taboo topic. I started choosing, right? Choosing, and I made a choice to not do that with my children. And I had to be intentional with showing them how to manage money, how to, you know, have a cash flow plan, and how to be responsible and wise. So if you grew up not talking about money, you're most likely going to struggle to talk about it. That's plain and simple, right? Because you tend to do what your family did, unless you have a situation where it's like so traumatic to the point where like, I will never do that. And then you tend to do the opposite. So it's, you know, try to understand why and give yourself grace and know that in order to really succeed and to get help and to be vulnerable and really learn and move forward. It's like I just had an episode this week about how like don't let your past experience dictate your future. Like you kind of have to work through it, whether it's with your therapist or with, you know, your spouse or a friend. Like, make sure you talk through and get it out as to why you feel shame and why you're struggling in this area, because there's a reason.
For sure. I have a 30-day tapping challenge on money. And one of the things that I tell people is your money story is directly correlated to your self-worth. And so that's when, to your point of like, dig in. Well, if you have shame around owning it, managing it, handling it, dealing with it, paying with it, receiving it, spending it, then let's explore your self-worth.
Ooh, that's good. I gotta see that.
Yeah, because, you know, money is a currency that we use to exchange for things, to trade for services, for items, for, you know, and like if I am spending $7 for coffee, it's because my self-worth is telling me I deserve that coffee. But then if I'm not paying my credit card with it, then what is that saying about it?
Ooh, that's good. I love your mindset stuff because it's so true. Like I think like one of it is so practical, right? Like, okay, this is how you do it. One, two, three. These are the steps. These are the skills. And then there's the mindset piece that is so powerful. And it's like, unless we dig into that, like all the practical stuff,
Yep.
it's not gonna work.
Totally. 100%. Yeah, we can just like keep digging into this stuff. But so tell us all the places and spaces where people can find you. How do you work with people?
So you can find me at defilatina.com. That's where you can go and schedule a 15-minute conversation with me. I'd love to help and just like give some advice. Like with everybody has a unique situation. And so if you want my undivided attention for 15 minutes. Would love to talk to you. I also have coaching available, and it's the 3-month program. It takes 90 days to really learn how to manage your money. So I don't have anything like that. I don't have a la carte stuff because it really does take 90 days. And I am on Instagram and TikTok, debtfreelatina.com. Or what is it? On Instagram, it's debtfree.latina. And then on TikTok, it's just debtfreelatina.
Nice. Yay. So exciting.
I am so excited. I'm so excited that we had this. Oh my gosh. I love you, Pam, especially having the opportunity to meet you in person at Podcast Movement last
That
year.
Was so cool. Yeah. Maida, for listeners, she was my WhatsApp friend for a long time.
Yes.
And we literally talked on WhatsApp for a long time, and we
were holding each other accountable to
I
be
was
on YouTube.
Hey, yes, how's that going?
It's good.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been posting my episodes since, you know, like I started posting again, and yeah, everything's on YouTube too.
Yay! Yeah, my YouTube journey is so we talk about it in the WhatsApp about YouTube. So I've been posting also. I have like 80 subscribers. Yay.
Yay. I don't know. I probably have like 20.
We'll get there. You know, it's all about quality, not quantity.
That's right.
So, well, Maida, thank you so much for coming to Cafe con Pam. This was super fun.
Thank you for having me, Pam.
Yes, we need to bring you back and do like a full dive into like get out of debt. Because I feel like, especially for under-resourced communities like ours, debt is a thing that's really pushed. You know, like you're handed a credit card the moment you walk into college. You're handed a credit card when you go to like any retailer. You know, like, do you want the 10% off that I was saying earlier? I hear it all the time and I'm like, really? You realize that this 10% off that you're giving me, I'm going to pay triple that in interest over time if I don't pay this off immediately. I also think there's good debt and bad debt. And I think even a credit card could be good debt if known how to manage.
Yes, I agree because I do own one now. And I feel like it took me a long time to trust myself that I could be responsible with it. But I also have, what is it now, 14 years of experience budgeting that I've never missed a month since 2010. So like, I feel like, okay, now I could plan this out. It gets paid off like probably even before the bill comes in. Who am I kidding? I honestly really use it for when I travel for like a car rental and like hotels. That's pretty much the only time I really swipe it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got sucked into a credit card for points. And that's a whole other podcast because I ended up settling it. Which like ruined my credit. And I'm down to like do a breakdown of how that happened and all the things.
Yeah, let's do it. Cuando quieras.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Which that's another thing. I used to be a credit card collector and people need to know and understand that you can settle your debt. It's not good for your credit, but you can settle it.
Yeah. If it's older debt, yes.
So you can always call and be like, yo, let's make this work. Okay. Well, Maida, last question. Do you have a remedio that you want to share?
I do. Un tecito de hierbabuena.
Nice.
But my tummy aches. My grandma would always make me un tecito.
Clásico de clásicos. And the last one. Two more. Do you have a quote or mantra that you live by?
If you help enough people get what they want, they will help you. Something along those lines. It's a Zig Ziglar quote.
Nice. Zig Ziglar was the OG salesperson.
Yeah.
I remember doing his trainings when I was in sales.
I love Zig.
Yeah. And do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool?
Yes. Time block. So what I do is I time block all the important things that I need to do so that I get a reminder on my phone from Google that it is time to go for a walk because it's very hard for me to get movement in.
Oh, I love that. Have your calendar hold yourself accountable.
That's right.
Very cool. Well, Maida, thank you so much for coming to Cafe con Pam. We'll be in touch. I'll be texting you.
Yes.
All right, listeners. that was my conversation with Mayra. I hope you enjoyed our time together. Let me know if you have any questions. If you want me to expand on something, perhaps I'm always down to bring in guests for the second time. Also, we have various ways of bringing people back. So it doesn't have to be just on the podcast. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, for example, that's a great place where we can do kind of like a second interview now because we have options. And so if you would like to do like a further explanation around or like just expansion on the show, do screenshot, tag us, let us know. And of course, let us know your thoughts. Y bueno, if you are watching this, you may notice that my office is a little different. If you're not watching it, maybe this is your invitation to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Café con Pam and watch the episodes, which we are doing now. So my office looks different because I am moving. I am transitioning from my tiny, actually it's not a tiny apartment, frankly, but it's small for the size of my family now. And I've lived here for 10 years, probably a little bit more than that, actually. It's been a bittersweet time to pack everything, to move my plantitas, to purge even things that I haven't used or no longer serve me, because I know I'm going through this process of also growing me and grieving the version of me who came into the space when I first when I still had my corporate job, when I still didn't have anything ready for Café con Pam. I had the idea, but I launched this podcast here. And so this is one of the very last calls, sessions, recordings that I do in this space. And so I'm basking it. I'm allowing myself to exist in it and to say thank you to the space. So I think I'm closing with this today because if you're in a place of transition, the invitation for you to consider, one, transitions are hard, and two, what could you learn from the version of you before the transition happened? What is that person, that version of you, what did they come with, and how are you leaving as the transition is happening? Because for me, as I'm leaving this apartment, I am so much more confident. I own my voice significantly more. I'm still working through it. I don't know if this work ever ends. I don't think it does. And even listening to my own voice, like in a physical level and a metaphorical level, I came across a recording that I did in 2018, 2017, something like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I sound like I'm 3 years old. And it's been a super fun journey. So if you've been here for a while, thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you for being on the journey all these years. So onward to the next place. I don't know what it will look like yet, as far as my office goes, my studio. But hopefully, it's going to be, not hopefully, we're going to work on making it super fun and exciting and inviting like this space was. Y bueno, listeners, this is the time, very late if you're still here, to leave a review. Perhaps this episode might have called you to be like, you know what? This is the time. I'm going to drop some stars, leave a review, whatever works for you. One of the things that I've noticed is that we are kind of like moving from Apple Podcasts into Spotify. So if you're listening on Spotify, you can drop stars. If you're still listening on Apple Podcasts, those are the two most popular for Café con Pam. If you are on Apple Podcasts, then that's where you can leave a review and actually drop your thoughts. And stars, obviously, stars are always welcome. And if you're in another podcast of choice, you can always do that as well. of course, follow us on the socials at Kafakampan Podcast, Instagram, Facebook. More content, exclusive content we are dropping on YouTube. Exclusive interviews that are not being dropped in the podcast. I'm doing in-person interviews because it's what I've always wanted to do. That's where we're going to drop the live episode that we recorded in San Diego recently. And so go to the tube. Iwana listeners, if you are like, what does this woman do? Check out kafakampan.com. I have a program called the Money's Pass. I am very much leaning towards closing enrollment. Right now it's open enrollment. And so probably going to close the enrollment so we can focus. And coming very soon, we're going to launch the Mercadito, Kafakampan Mercadito, for small businesses. So you're able to promote and let the world know that you exist through Kafakampan, which is one of my goals, is to have a space that is accessible to all so you can advertise. Because I do believe not just the big companies can advertise on podcasts. I do think small businesses can do it too. And I'm working as we speak on a program for all of us, because, you know, I'm sure you're tired of hearing about, I'm not going to call them out, but XYZ mental health company, because there's so many other incredible people that can take up that space. And that's what Kafakampan is for. So while we do open up the space for big advertisers to come, I also want to make sure that the space is also open for people that have less access, less capital, less resources, because that's why we exist. All right, listeners. Well, thank you so much for being here today. If you made it until this point, we have new Kafakampan stickers. So if you're still here, go subscribe on the YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and you subscribe, hit the bell, obviously, so you're the first to know when new episodes drop. Leave a comment and say the word panda. You write panda, I'm going to send you a sticker on my dime. I'll pay for the stamp because I want to see how many people stay till the end. Okay. So this is not what it looks like. It looks like this, actually. I've been putting it everywhere because I'm like, yay, we have merch. Y bueno, listeners, gracias por estar aquí. Como siempre, stay shining. Sabrosura, papi, que